For comic's sake, this is Volume 1, Issue 26.
For comic's sake on iTunes.
At For comic's sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For comic's sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
Rated Max for explicit content not approved by the Comics Code Authority. Previously on For Comics Sake. Anthony tried finding a cure for the mutagen that turns a turtle guy into a Hawkeye.
Ryan was illegally brewing beer in the kingdom of the Rice King.
I'm Anthony, and I'll be talking spoilers for Inhumans vs. X-Men number 1, Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Adventures number 2, and Hawkeye number 1.
And I'm Ryan, I'll be talking about The Flash number 12 and Jessica Jones number 3.
Also, if we say anything that isn't actually true, just blame Barry Allen for always messing up the timelines. Starting off with...
How dare you?
Yeah, it's always his fault, so... Inhumans vs. X-Men issue number 1, the big event that kicks off directly after Inhumans vs. X-Men issue 0.
I wonder what comes after issue number 1.
2.
Oh, holy shit.
Written by Charles Soule and Jeff Lemire, pencils by Lionel Francis Yu, we've got inks by Jerry Allegillan, and colors by David Curiel and Clayton Cowles on the letters.
Clayton Cowles, how many books is he working on? For real.
3,000.
I wouldn't...
3,004.
Yeah, okay, all right, there we go.
And I was underplaying it. Victory means life. Defeat means extinction. For the Inhumans, the Terrigen Mist unlocks their true selves and creates a future for the race. For the X-Men, the cloud is poison and means the extinction of their kind. Leaders of both groups have been working together for months to find a way to coexist. Check that out in issue 0. But time has run out. If the cloud remains, the mutant species is terminated. If the cloud is destroyed, the Inhuman legacy comes to an end. Now there is only one option. War.
Settle down.
I will not settle down because this is the start of an explosive event after Inhumans
are
resurrected.
Are there tie-in books with this?
There
is. Do we not know that yet?
Nope, there is. We do know that.
Just curious.
And yeah, there are with the Inhumans books and with the... with all the different X-Men books
nice.
And stuff. So, here we go. Right in the opening, Beast visits Scott Summers' grave to realize that he himself isn't dead, and he goes to tell the X-Men that there's only 2 weeks left until they all die from the Terrigen Mist. So after the events of...
What a conversation. How uncomfortable.
By checking out issue 0, we had seen the 8-month process of him trying to figure it out.
That's right, yeah.
And then I had mentioned how he had found the only cure is that you would have to find...
For every
single mutant, you have to find an individual cure. So, he's kind of visiting Scott's grave there, which are the events of Death of X. And then that's when he realizes, like, wait a minute, he's like, I'm still alive, why am I sitting here, you know, time is being wasted, I have to go let them know. And, so he kind of talks with everybody, and, you know, all the different X-Men are there, from Logan and Magneto and Emma Frost and all that kind of mess. So there's a lot going on. This issue overall is a very, like, a lot of talking in between both groups, and, you know, even though the cover just shows everybody just...
Mm-hmm. It's a cool cover, though.
Yeah. It's got everybody. Miss Marvel's on there, and even Moon Girl is on there. And it's pretty sweet cover to kind of kick this off. But this is just keeps escalating as it goes here. Meanwhile, in the Quiet Room, which is Black Bolt's his little club, his little nightclub, in which is like it's kind of mutual ground for everybody. Like if anybody. You know, all these different, like, races and aliens and stuff going in there. They can just go there, get a drink, listen to some music, hang out, and it's all kind of expected to be like, all right, no fighting's going on, and if there is, then Black Bolt's just gonna say a word and just demolish these people. So we're in the Quiet Room, which is a great name there for Black Bolt's his club, and we see a new singer get hired, and that's going to make some more sense as we go on, but they make reference to this new singer that's up there playing, and when you're reading it, you're just like, oh, okay, that was weird, but we definitely come back to that later. Beast is further explaining that the last of the remaining Terrigen Cloud, because they got rid of one in Death of X, and apparently there's one more, and it says it'll soon dissipate and spread everywhere and kill them all. So he's once again just kind of still warning them and just being like, this is what's going to happen. We mm-hmm. have to come up with something soon. Medusa is prepping the birth of a few new Inhumans, while Johnny Storm sees something coming their way. So, yeah, we have a couple newbies that are just kind of standing there, new humans, if you will, and new humans, not N-E-W humans. That's what
would not have known that.
Yeah, they call them new humans in the Inhuman series from a couple years ago. That was one of the phrases mm-hmm. they used for any new Inhumans was new humans. But yeah, and then he kind of looked off in the distance and you just kind of see him go, something's coming. And then you turn the page being like, what's coming? And they're like, ah, shit, you know, cut to a different scene, you know? So it was a nice little, once again, everything is just kind of building up here. Then we cut to Beast, who is suggesting to find a new permanent home off Earth, while Magneto says they should fight. So Beast is, basically just saying how they should just run away, and kind of how they kind of were in the was it New Haven? I think that's what they called it. X-Haven. They were in X-Haven, which was in Limbo, and that's where Storm was hiding out with all the like remaining X-Men, and then she had decided, okay, we can't sit here. I talked about that in the Extraordinary X-Men issue last month, and they decide to, that Beast is like, all right, we just have to, like, basically just live off Earth and just go find a planet and Magneto. You could see some fighting going on within the X-Men of just all of them deciding, you know, if they're going to be fighting for their race or not. And I talked about me, I'm Team Beast, and I'm all with his decisions. And,
yeah.
And, you know, he's the smartest one out of all of them there, so I'm just like, you know what, you should listen to what he says, so. Then we have Crystal and Gorgon, who are continuing their mission of saving mutants when the cloud is coming at them. So they've been tasked with basically just seeing where the cloud goes, jump in there, locate some mutants, get them out of there quick. So you have a team of Inhumans helping mutants. So it's not like everyone's thinking like, oh, the Inhumans are, you know, they're excited that this is happening. They're going out there and making sure they can save every single mutant they can. And then they come across this cloaked mutant here who is kind of just, kind of looks like Dr. Doom in a way, just the way he's kind of hidden and you're not really sure, you know, who the hell this is. And you can kind of sense that something isn't right, but they're like, all right, we got you. Let's get him out of here. That's kind of be a pretty explosive reveal. So hang tight, listener. And then they find, found the cloak mutant. Then we see a mutant is approaching Karnak's tower, and his power is that he can sense flaws. So they kind of decided that he'd be the first one that they should take out. Magneto and Emma Frost have been having this plan that we talked about in issue zero, and they figure like, all right, we have to take out Karnak first because he's going to be the one to like sense that some shit's going down. So we get a tease that he's out there meditating, and then we get a tease that a mutant has come to see him, and that's another thing. Like, we're just getting these, like, two-page mm-hmm. Little mini-stories as they just keep jumping around between the mutants and the humans here. So it's a pretty fun, like, build-up here of just going through this. Then we have Logan, who is pointing out that something needs to be done with Lockjaw. Lockjaw is the Inhuman's dog who can just basically teleport everyone. And they're like, well, we also, if we're looking at Karnak, we also have to do something about Lockjaw because he's a big escape plan, basically. And that got me excited because Lockjaw, for the last 2 years or so, has been hanging out in Jersey City as the pet of Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel. So Kamala Khan's just on the phone, Lockjaw's there, he gets distracted, he sniffs something, takes off. She's not too worried because, you know, He's a dog that can kind of fend for himself. He's a teleporting inhuman dog.
Oh, jeez.
So it's just like, you know what? He runs off. He'll find his way back.
You know, I realize that this is just a very small part of the book, this dog. But I have to appreciate how they take just a really small, minute character like that and tie it in with other characters throughout the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting to see Lockjaw show up to kind of... Because when Miss Marvel came to power, she's an inhuman. And when she got her inhuman powers... Medusa's like, all right, we should look after her. You know, she's got her own family in Jersey City and stuff, so we're not going to like make her live New Adelan with all the other Inhumans. But they're like, you know, we should send someone there to kind of watch over her. And then what other better choice than a watchdog in Lockjaw? Then we cut to Storm, who says they should all vote on whether they should go to war. And after everyone kind of weighs in, it's leaning towards war. And this is what cuts to a pretty crazy moment that Beast is like, you know what, I don't want anything of this. He doesn't want him. He voted to not go into war. He storms off, and pun intended, because Storm zaps him, knocks him down, and basically he's knocked out. And she kind of stands up and says that it was part of her... She was part of the plan of Magneto and Emma Frost. At the end of issue zero that I talked about on the podcast, Emma Frost went up to Storm and says, all right, I'm going to save everybody. And then, and basically Storm jumped in with the plans and stuff. So seeing her knock Beast down, whew, I don't know.
It hurt.
Yeah, not only hurt Beast, but it hurt me.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Meanwhile, Emma Frost is sitting down with a one-sided chat with Black Bolt, and we see that new singer, who is apparently revealed as Dazzler. Dazzler is revealed as that mystery singer, as I talked about, and Emma Frost turns into her crystallized form, and between her and Dazzler, Dazzler uses some kind of power to, like, hold back Black Bolt from speaking, because he's ready. Whoa. He says...
That's like a new thing that I've never heard of.
Yeah, wow. I'm not too familiar with like what she's doing. Holy I'm just saying shit. She's using powers. And he's about to say don't. And you could see it in his mouth just very minimally as he's about to stop Emma Frost. But then Dazzler shows up as the singer and basically like kind of like holds him back so they can kind of get the upper hand a little bit. She's like beating him up and knocks him out. And they storm out of there. And that's when it's just like, oh shit, shit's going down when Emma Frost is like now basically swung the first fist. Then back to Karnak Tower is when we see that young Jean Grey was the mutant that approached him. And what happened, he's not too threatened by her, but what's kind of crazy that with her powers, and I'm assuming some like her mind trick, you know, she does the... She can read people's minds and talk to people and stuff. Apparently, through her power, there's some trippy two-pager here of she's had him trapped in this spot for quite a while. So while he thought he was just sitting there meditating, like, with her mind power, somehow she was able to just keep him there without him realizing that, you know, he's meditating. But he doesn't realize that he can't get out of it.
Okay.
And so she's, like, now laying down the law on him. And it's pretty crazy just how, like, all this shit is happening where it just, you know, as they're all talking about whether they should go to war or not and prepping for it, Magneto and Emma Frost had started this plan that's, like, slowly starting to take place. And, not you know, it's not just, like... In Civil War, where they all showed up on the rooftop of the Triskelion, and then they all just started fighting. This is all just happening. Like the mutants are being blindsided, or the Inhumans are being blindsided, and this is when we cut back to the cloak character who releases the hood, and it's fucking Magneto, which now makes me wonder. I think Emma Frost was doing some trickery because Magneto was in there but wearing a helmet the whole time. And he was there with the whole discussion room and stuff with the other mutants when Beast was talking to him. So apparently the whole time Magneto has been hidden, and he's in the middle of, He's on the ship, the Inhuman ship, when they're going around and saving them, and he uses his powers and basically just takes apart the ship midair and just sends everyone else, like, who can't, none of them can fly. He can fly, and he's fine. But yeah, he has this moment where he just takes a part of the ship, completely surprises them. That was pretty nuts. Then the mutant Phantom X, who I'm not that familiar with who he is. He's this dude here. He is tasked with giving sleeping pills to Lockjaw. And so that's what he, like, I don't know what he, like, lured him over, but he smelled something. And when we cut back to Lockjaw, he's just snoozing in the alley. And Phantom X goes, he goes, everything I can do for these people. And it's, oh, Phantom X, you go after the dog. So, yeah, that was kind of an interesting thing. So while he feels that it, you know, maybe wasn't that big of a job, in the end, you know, he was taking down a major player of the Inhumans. Because, yeah, if they're all, like, at war, Lockjaw could just be like, zip, we're all out of here. So, yeah, that happened. And then, finally, on New Adelan, what Johnny Storm saw at the beginning of the book when he said there's something coming. And we see that what's coming in the distance is none other than all the frickin' X-Men.
Holy shit.
Because they're just, now they knocked down the main players, and now they're all just going, and they're just like, you know, we're doing this, we're stopping this. And, yeah, I don't know if Beast is going to be locked up or where he's at, but he's not in there in the fight, so they zapped him out. I'm curious to see if they just let him be knocked out or if they actually threw him in a jail cell or something, but
Charles, you said Charles Soule is writing this?
And Jeff Lemire, because Jeff Lemire has been writing the Extraordinary X-Men book. Charles Soule has been writing the Inhumans books. They're collaborating with co-writing this miniseries up to 6 issues. This is the first explosive one.
They are, they're getting a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
Like, they really are. Like, those guys have earned their way to do big events like this with Marvel.
Yeah, and while Charles Soule is doing this, he's also, you know, like, writing Star Wars books and doing all that shit. So it's just like, the dude's doing everything. So.
Very cool.
So, that's intense. That was a pretty big start to it. And
it's a big-ass book. That's why you were reading this and I grabbed it, because I just wanted, because this is like a, it's a heavy-duty book.
It was a $5.99 one. It's got a pretty thick cover there. Yeah. And it was, when I read a comic book, this is a great example of a comic book that I want, like, expect out of a comic
book.
Superhero comic.
Yeah.
Just a lot of action, though there really wasn't a lot of fighting. But by the end of it, I'm just like, damn, issue 2 is going to be nuts. So, cool. So yeah, that was awesome. Inhumans versus X-Men, numero one.
All right, I'm going to be talking about The Flash number 12, Speed of Darkness, Part 3. Time is running out for The Flash and Kid Flash as they race to Shade.
Race to Shade? They're going to get to the Shade under a tree or what?
They race to help the Shade regain control of the Shadowlands. The dimension of pure darkness, which the Shade draws its terrible power before it reaches our world and consumes the light forever. We have writer Joshua Williamson. We have David Gianfelice is the artist.
Sure.
Ivan Palencia and Christopher Sotomayor are the colorists. And we have letterer Steve Wands. So, I did those last names pretty well, I think. If I don't say so myself.
You had a lot of trouble with Steve Wands, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we start with a flashback, and we have Kid Flash and Flash talking to one another. And we have Kid Flash trying to guess the name, the secret identity of Flash, because Flash doesn't 100%, I hate to say he doesn't trust Kid Flash, but he hasn't exactly earned a spot in his life to be able to trust him with his secrets.
Yeah, and then only further, like, protects him for the less he knows.
But exactly. We find that out later on. They have a conversation, but we'll get there in just a little bit.
Yeah,
but
he attempts to call him Steve and Sean, then he says something later, too. But
But he's definitely being a pretty stubborn about, you know, wanting to give his secret identity out. And then we're back in this place that they're trapped in right now.
The Shadowlands.
Yeah, they're trapped in the Shadowland. And if we remember, we have Hope and Iris are also trapped there. And they have been kind of overtaken by the darkness. So they're not really they're not themselves right now, you could say. They want to be bad, and they want to, they're not like, quote-unquote, good guys as of right now. And they're trying to find out a way, Flash and Kid Flash, to how to save them and how to get out of this land, because they're kind of being overrun by these shadows, so they can't really move. But we have Rose and Hope here. They're having a conversation. Rose is pretty much saying that she wants to give in to this power. And Iris is pretty much agreeing with her. And she's saying that she's sick of being the damsel in distress. And she doesn't need Flash. She doesn't need Kid Flash. She doesn't need them at all. So then we cut back to Flash and Kid Flash here. And the shadows are overtaking them. And they really don't know what to do. I think it's, yeah, Flash has an idea, and he wants them to essentially vibrate. And Kid Flash is saying that he can't. And this is where it does get a little bit emotional, because Kid Flash is saying that he can't, because it was, Mina was eventually going to teach him,
if
you remember. And Mina is no longer with us any longer. So what you
then we had that little tease of Mina, like, existing somewhere. But then they just jumped into this and made us forget about it. But,
I think that if I had to guess, she's going to be back, if I had to guess. I don't know for sure. They were not spoiling anything.
I would say that'd be a great guess.
Yes. But we have... we have them trying to do that, but they decide to do something else. They come up with a different way to potentially, I'm jumping way far ahead here. Oh, I'm already at the end of the book. We can't do that. Can't get that far. But yeah, they do vibrate, and they're able to, Kid Flash kind of has this big explosion that happens, and all of these shadows kind of... They don't really show it, but you're led to believe that they're kind of, they're not tangled up anymore, and these shadows kind of fly off them. And so they are running to find Iris and Hope. You with me here?
I think so.
Okay, all right. And then we get this big, there's like this giant poster sneak peek thing in the middle of the book. I actually didn't look at this, to tell you the truth. I'm looking at it right now for the first time.
It folds out from, like, one end of your town to the next end of the town.
And that's if you're, like, in a pretty big town.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're in an average-sized town right here, and it's bigger than that, so. Where are we here? Yeah, you can tell that they are, to a certain extent... you can see, I think, Iris, I feel like she mentally is starting to fight back a little bit against this darkness. We have Shade that comes up, and he's saying that his heart is being broken because they're actually giving into it. Hope, for whatever reason, I keep wanting to call her Rose. I don't know why.
Rose?
There's no Rose in this book from what I remember. But she is starting to give into it big time. Iris, not nearly as much. Let's see here. This thing is throwing me for a loop here. I feel like I'm missing a page. Let's see. Okay. Shade, grabs on to, Hope, and
Rose?
What's that?
Rose?
Yeah, I know. I almost said that. I don't know why. But he kind of grabs onto her and says, I'm going to show you what darkness really is. And this is when both Kid Flash and the Flash come in. They grab Iris, and they want to leave. And Shade is like, just save yourself. And then they both Flash and Kid Flash get an idea. They decide that they need a super bright light. And instead of having like a big lightning bolt or something, they actually fist bump. one another, and you get this gigantic, it's like a
crack-a-boom.
You get this gigantic two-page spread of this fist bump that leaves this big, huge, massive light.
Yeah, I remember turning this and just being like, all right, here's the fist bump, and then also just like, really like,
it's like a really exploding. bright two pages, and then we suddenly get, we're back in Central City, and it's morning. So they basically have used this big, gigantic, like, lightning bolt fist bump thing that they did to kind of get them out of this Shadowland. And the Kid Flash says to Iris, how did you stop the darkness from possessing you? And Iris says, I guess I'm just too stubborn. And the reason I bring that up is because in the beginning of the book, the Flash is saying how, Kid Flash is saying how he's being stubborn about everything and how he gets it from Iris. So then you kind of see that. And we have some conversation between all of them. And there's a really good line in here because both Shade and Hope, they're going to be leaving now. And Shade says, let your lovely wife get some rest, Flash. Give her my regards. And the Flash says, wife, we're not married. And then Shay just says, my mistake. And he kind of disappears and his top hat is left behind. So Kid Flash brings Iris home. And we have Kid Flash trying to guess the name of the Flash. And he calls him Lance, and I think in the earlier, like, he says Steve, and he just has all these random names that he's trying to guess, and that's when you find out the reason that the Flash doesn't really want to tell Kid Flash anything is because he does not want him to have any kind of burden. He doesn't want him to have to keep a secret because it can be more work than it's worth. So in a way, he's kind of doing him He's doing a favor.
Yeah, and he says that Wally deserves to be a kid, is what he says.
So Flash is at the office, and he kind of gets an idea. Maybe some risks are worth taking. So he whooshes out of there, and he goes to Iris's house, knocks on the door.
Fist bumps the door.
And Iris is like, oh, do you got a story for me to write? And he's like, well, no, I'm actually here for you.
I would say, yeah, write this.
Yeah.
You and me together.
And he says, would you like to go out on a date with me? So I thought that was kind of neat because clearly some other people might be able to see that they may or may not be meant to be together. Like Shade assumed that they were married.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, we actually are reading a DC book that has a happy ending. Yeah, I just want to throw that out there.
And then the next issue said date night, so it sounds like it's going to be a 100% a happy issue.
Yes.
Because nothing's going to go wrong there.
Nothing's going to go wrong in any date ever that has ever happened in the history of dates.
And then I want to draw attention here to an ad for Detective Comics 948, Batwoman Begins Part 1, which is co-written by not only James Tynion the Fourth, who has been writing Detective since the Rebirth, but Marguerite Bennett is jumping on to co-write this because this will spin into her Batwoman series that will start a solo Batman Batwoman series written by Marguerite Bennett. So Marguerite Bennett, who doesn't seem to have enough to write because she is writing a million things.
She, you know, for someone that I didn't really know that well, I gotten to know more of her work the past year. Seems like she's just, they're giving her everything now.
Yeah.
So, The Flash is a really good book. And the reason I made that crack about it being a happy ending is because as much as I like reading Batman, and I know you are enjoying Batman and Detective Comics.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily the happiest books in the world.
No.
So it's pretty refreshing to actually read a character that you and I love that it's a little bit more uplifting. I know you made that comment. It's a DC book that reads like a Marvel book, too.
Yeah.
So, and I can't really agree with that anymore. So, but that's The Flash number 12.
Next up is Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Adventures, issue number 2.
Wow, way to screw it up.
I know.
So disappointing.
All downhill from here. The Joker and Harley Quinn escape Arkham Asylum and make their way to the TMNT's New York City... or TMNT's NYC. Might as well just keep everything abbreviated in
acronyms. Sure, just abbreviate the whole spoiler.
WTMNOTS. That is where they meet none other than the Shredder. MWBRABBATFATWTT. And that, of course, stands for Meanwhile, while Batman, Robin, and Batgirl be able to form, will be able to, you know,
Maybe
I don't think everything's meant to be acronymized.
No, how you say it? Oh, that is a, if that's a real word, it's gotta be a word. I've never heard it in my life. It's impressed.
Acronymized.
That's impressive.
Meanwhile, while Batman, Robin, and Batgirl, there must have been a typo on the IDW page here, because it says be able to form a truce. So will they be able to form a truce with the Turtles? Holy crap. Anyways, this
if you're still listening.
Meanwhile, the Hall of Justice, written by Matthew K. Manning, art by a guy who tweets at us one time. His name is John Samariva, maybe.
Tweet again and let us know if we're saying your name right.
Inked by Sean Parsons and Sergei Lapointe, maybe. Colors by Leonardo Aito. Letters by Sean Lee. Now, when I talked about the first issue, it ended with Mark Hamill's Joker showing up in the asking for Shredder, and then John here, the artist of the book, tweeted at us and said, "Hey, that was a great impression of the Joker. You should do that for the entire second issue." And well, very flattered as I am, I'm not going to do
it's
that.
It's actually a terrible impression.
Yeah. I played a sound clip the whole time.
Yeah.
No, so I'm not going to do that, but for the entire issue.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll jump in.
Oh, you've got to at least do it a little bit, yeah. It's good, man.
I refuse to until he pays us.
Yeah, right.
The price of this comic, no. Going back to it, let's jump right into it. We open up with the Joker and Harley Quinn telling Shredder how they escaped prison and jumped into a portal into their world. So it's a little bit of like a rewind here to kind of see how they wound up in the alley in the Turtles world. And we see Harley's going through, and there is this like a mop and a wet floor sign, and they're just saying like, oh, you know, watch out for this, you're gonna slip. And she uses that as to very like acrobat-y type of slip to then do these crazy like backwards kicks and knocks these guards out. So she uses that to her advantage and easily knocks them out, so she can get like an extra pair of prison uniform here for the Joker to break him out. And you know, she goes up and at him, Mr. J, and ready.
What's your Harley Quinn impression?
Up and at him, Mr. J.
Yeah, there we go.
Come on, Puddin', stop the frowning and get the clowning. And he's like, oh, honestly, it's like you've learned nothing from me, Harley. How many years have I been mentoring you, and this is your idea of an escape? Yeah, there wasn't anything real jokery to say in that one. So, but anyways, he suits up. She's got his classic purple outfit ready to go, and as they're ready to leave, they see these two blinking triangles, which we saw in the first issue, which was like the portals that we were seeing jumping, like when Clayface was in the sewer and the Turtles and stuff, and he I think that's where they jumped through or something. But so anyways, Harley and Joker make the run through, and that's how they showed up in front of Shredder. And he goes, he's asking what the name is, and he goes, and then we wound up here, Mr. What is it again? Slicer? Grater? No, that's not it. Don't tell me. And then he just goes, and then I guess in the voice of James Avery, of the even though this is for the Nickelodeon Turtles, which I don't watch, so I don't know who does the voice, but James Avery, who was Uncle Phil, he did the voice of...
You got this.
Yep, so... Hold on, because he would always go,
Will?
Yeah. Vivian?
Yeah.
He would go on, the Turtles would be, because Krang would be like, Shredder, why haven't you completed my new body? And he's like, but I have. So I guess he would just be like, the name is Shredder. Oh boy, John, you are turning this review because you're forcing me to, you know, be a your dancing puppet man.
Yeah, yeah.
Got me on his puppet strings and dance monkey dance. Anyways, Joker, well, he even calls him. He goes, "No, that doesn't ring a bell. The juicer? I'm pretty sure it's the juicer." So yeah, Joker's having fun. You know, Shredder's not a guy you want to piss off.
No.
But Joker is a guy that loves pissing people off, and when he, like, misnames him, like, four or five times. So, yeah, that gets pretty great. And you see Bebop and Rocksteady in the back here, hanging out with the Shredder and ready to meet the Joker here. Then we have, meanwhile, Batman, Batgirl, and Robin locate one of these portals, and they enter the Turtles version of New York City. Actually, I skipped over this. We see that the Joker, he's always a couple steps ahead of everybody, and even someone like the Shredder, he waves them off because he looks up and there's all these rubber chickens that are hanging from the ceiling, and those rubber chickens are basically bombs.
Oh jeez.
Yeah, because he tosses one towards them, and then he kind of shows them what they are and then makes them look up, and it's just like, you know, he's got the place rigged basically. So so we cut to Batman, Robin, and Batgirl find the portal. They jump in to the portal, and there's a great scene where Michelangelo is on the other side of the portal, and he's reaching in, and he just goes, he's grabbing around, and he's trying to describe what he feels, and he's like, it's a gargoyle, I think, and you cut to him just like basically feeling up Batman's face, and then he just goes, a really angry gargoyle, and Batman punches him. They jump into the other side here, and that's when you see, like, the Turtles react to this Batman, and they're all going back and forth, and then you see a little scene where Donatello's kind of maybe falling in love with Batgirl, and Michelangelo refers to Robin as a kid dressed in red, and, so they kind of have, like, a little fight scene here until you cut to Leonardo and Batman, who are, they're kind of going back and forth with each other.
They're like the leaders of their respective parties.
Yeah, and they both realize that neither of them are doing lethal blows to one another. And that's when they realize, like, Batman even goes, he goes, hold that thought. And they're like, we're on the same side, aren't we? And that's when they realize that, okay, they are good. And it takes the intelligence of Leonardo and Batman to basically make a truce here. And while that's happening, we get a little scream off in the park here, and we see someone being attacked, and he sees some vines, and then he sees this giant, like, praying mantis type of creature here. And Leonardo, I'm not sure, like, I look at this, and it says it's snakeweed. It's a mutant plant hybrid, your garden's worst enemy, it says. And I'm not familiar with this creature at all. And then is when Leonardo, and I'm like, oh, this is why I don't know it, because Leonardo goes, we fought this guy before. So I'm like, oh, I don't watch the current Nickelodeon cartoon, so that makes sense. But that's when Batman's like, no. Or, if, like, Adam West Batman would be like, no.
Yeah.
He goes, this isn't one of yours. Even though, once again, Adam West doesn't voice his Batman. Kevin Conroy does, and I can't do Kevin Conroy. He goes, it's one of mine. Because it's Poison Ivy who is controlling the snakeweed guy, and that's how this issue ends. So the first issue ended with Joker and Harley, big surprise, and then this one ends with, she's not hinted on at the cover. You know, sometimes you'd get those little teases and stuff, being like, oh, there's a Poison Ivy issue. So that was pretty fun to be like, oh, there's a Turtle villain that I'm not familiar with. And then also to be like, oh, wait, this is somebody I'm familiar with. So, yeah.
What a fun crossover. God. And when they do...
Fun.
Well, and when they do crossovers like this, like with two different, you know, companies.
Yeah.
There are, in my opinion, there's no rules. So, like, you can have, like, okay, so you had Harley Quinn show up at the end of this. Like, you can, who knows who else is going to show up in here. You know, because it's not like it's canon. So you can, whatever.
You know, even though it has nothing to do with the last time they did this team up, because that was, like, existing in the comic universe of it. And even though there was still a lot of fun with it, with the Turtles and stuff, it was a little more of an adult type of action story. And this one, taking place in the animated universe, is really just uses that to their strength. And Oh God! And,
oh, very cool.
Yeah, the writing is perfect for both sides, and then the art just captures those styles of the Nickelodeon and the original Batman animated series. So
very nice,
excellent issue. And no, John, I'm not going to do any more voices for you unless you tweet at us again, and then I guess I probably
then you're going to have to.
Yeah. So that'll be to see if he came back to listen.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe he's not listening at all, and he's just like, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think that Anthony's not going to do it, so I'm not even going to bother. That's what he says. Or he's busy drawing this excellent book.
Or he's busy listening to a thousand other podcasts.
Yeah, that too. So seeing which Mark Hamill impression is the best.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think I'm just going to stick with the Harley Quinn one now that you asked me, you know. Mr. J, as long as she says that in every sentence, I can then say all of the other words. So, excellent issue once again, Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Adventures issue number 2.
All right, I'm going to be talking about Jessica Jones number 3. Strapped for cash, Jessica was hired to investigate a man who believes he's in the wrong reality by his distressed wife. Only receive a call from a homicide detective that she'd been murdered, most likely by her own husband. But before Jessica could process the alarming development, she was abducted off the street by the criminal known as The Spot. Writer, Brian Michael Bendis. Artist, Michael Gatos. Color artist, Matt Hollingsworth. And letterer is Corey Petit. I remember asking the question at the end of issue number 2, oh, what was that mysterious hand that blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, it's literally answered for me.
Yeah.
Because I know The Spot, but I'm not that familiar with that character. But I just thought it was funny. Maybe it's actually super obvious, except to me, who it was.
The only Spot I knew that I was familiar with is the one that, you know, lives in the 7-Up logo. So.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Got his own video game. What the hell?
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Back in the day, there was a Spot video game.
I had a 7-Up
Nintendo.
Had a 7-Up T-shirt, and it was that one from the commercial where it was the Make 7, and on the back it said "Up yours."
Yeah,
save me, pal.
I want to say those were frowned upon at high school during that time because they were
too risky.
Edgy, yeah.
Oh boy, can't do that. But anyway, let's catch back up with Jessica Jones. I don't think she's going to be drinking a 7-Up because she is currently tied up.
Great segue.
Yes, she is currently tied up at in some mysterious building. And I don't know if she's maybe having some kind of a weird vision or if she's daydreaming.
Having some hallucinations.
Yeah, but like we've got, I think that would be...
Well, I don't know if this is Miss America.
Okay.
Because there's a...
I'm assuming this is a character from... back in the quote-unquote day when she was on the Avengers. Like, that's kind of what I got from it.
Because there's America Chavez who is currently, like, I think she's Miss America.
Okay.
But this isn't... So I don't know if she took the mantle from her here or something. But
basically, she's having an hallucination with a girl that's that almost has, like, a Captain America shield. And I'm led to believe that she's thinking of something that had happened years and years and years ago when she was on the Avengers. That's kind of what I get out of it. But anyways, she is currently tied up in a mysterious building somewhere, and Jessica's like, screw you, just get on with it. And there's some mysterious word balloon that says, get on with what?
Okay.
And Jessica...
Well, going back to this, because, you know, she refers... Because Danny's the name of her daughter, and then here's... Because they're having a mom conversation, because she calls her Jessica Mom here. And she's just kind of confused on what's going on. And with Marvel Comics and just any kind of comics, it was just like timelines and stuff. So I don't know if this is like their daughter from the future came into the present or something.
Oh, okay.
If that was a thing that happened, I don't know. But she's having some hallucination in this sense. But
okay.
So I just don't know the status of this quote-unquote Miss America.
The only reason I didn't touch on it that much is because you don't see any reference to this at all for the rest of the book. So we'll see. I don't know. Maybe in issue number 4, we're going to get another flashback like that. I don't know. Because, you know, number 4 is not out yet.
Yeah, but we definitely don't know that yet.
Anyways, Jessica is talking to this mysterious person, and she's under the impression that there's a reason that she's there. She's obviously, to Jessica, not going to get killed because she feels like the person that abducted her would have already gotten into it. So we have a sudden arm that comes out and punches Jessica in the face, and she does it a couple times, or the spot, I guess, does it a couple times, and she calls him a coward, and the fist and the arm come out of the spot, and she kind of tricks him, and she backs up, and she, like, bites his arm like a zombie, and he's just like, ah, stop it, and she calls him an asshole, and I actually just think this is kind of funny, because the spot in it, in his entirety, jumps out and says that he's going to kill her, and then we have the character that we're introduced to, which we don't actually officially find out her name, her official name, but she's just like, stop it. I told you to keep it classy. Sit her up and speak with her with some respect. And he's just like, fine. And it's just kind of funny because it's like he's a little kid. So I don't know how serious of like a supervillain he is. But it's just kind of, I think it's kind of funny the relationship that he has. And basically this new character, who doesn't reveal her name, says that if you don't kind of shape up, you're not going to get paid. And he's just kind of like, this lady, you need an attitude adjustment in the worst way. And I just thought that whole thing was just kind of funny because he's basically acting like a child. But anyways, but Jessica was taken, and we don't know why yet. But she's having a conversation with this lady, and Jessica's like, you know, if you wanted to talk to me, you could have just made an appointment. And this lady says, well, I would have, but you were in prison. And Jessica's like, how do you know I was in prison? And this lady says, well, I did know. Why? Who do you think got you out? And it's revealed that this lady is the one who bailed Jessica or somehow got Jessica out of prison. We cut back to her alias investigation office, and we have
Luke Cage.
Yeah, Luke Cage is there, and he's listening to all of her voicemails, trying to figure out exactly what is going on. And there is someone else in the office with him, and
he's that cop that was detective or whatever that was
investigating that one murder.
Yeah.
And he is just want to make sure I'm getting this right here.
Well, we already gave the clause at the top of the program where
top of the program. Yeah. Yes.
We don't say anything else on this podcast.
Yeah.
That, you know, if there's any mistakes, that just blame it on Barry Allen and
the
timeline.
So. But I know. That's right. The detective was talking to Jessica on the phone, and suddenly the phone kind of cut out, and he was led to believe that maybe she was taken because the phone was just dropped. And Luke is like, you know, where is she? So anyway, we cut back to Jessica and this lady, and Jessica is trying to find out exactly who this lady is. And she's like guessing. She's like, are you Hydra? AIM? And she guesses some other things. Like, is she working for Kingpin? Yeah, she's kind of enjoying to a certain extent, well, sarcastically, she is enjoying this conversation that she's having. But finally, they get down to brass tacks, and this lady is saying, you know, you are a badass. And in a way, she almost is, she just appreciates what Jessica Jones can do. And she also likes the fact that Jessica, is not afraid of this lady. And she says that her name is Allison. And then Jessica's like, Allison? And then she says, you get to call me Allison. So I don't know if that's actually like her real name, but for going forward, we're going to refer to her as Allison.
Yeah.
And Jessica makes a couple jokes, so not Dr. Mayhem, Professor Diabolic, the Silver Slut. So you can tell that she's getting pretty irritated with this lady because she's not really letting you know why she's there yet. And you find out that Allison was arrested by one of her best friends, Carol Danvers, for something that she didn't do.
Yes, as soon as she name-dropped that she was Allison, I was just like, because in the early issues of Civil War, one of Ulysses' visions was Allison, and she was arrested on, like, ooh, the steps of a courtroom or something, like a courthouse or something.
Oh, my God.
She was thrown, and she was going, she was like, they said, like, she was going to have, like, a bomb in her briefcase, but she had nothing in her briefcase.
Holy shit.
And then she was held under, against her will, in
an interrogation room. I have to put my iPad down.
In an interrogation room, because when that all that shit was going on, Nightcrawler came in, bamfed her in and out, and saved her and got her out of there. So when she name-dropped Allison, I was just like... And then, yeah, then she explained, like, I don't know what her ulterior motive... Because we never touched on her again. That just happened, and then it kind of went away until Brian Bendis brought it back into here. So yeah.
Wow.
That's where she's from.
I'm going to have a hard time continuing with this right now. That I never made that connection. Oh, I have just that much more appreciation for this comic book right now.
There you go.
Oh, that is awesome. I wonder if he planted that seed knowing that he was going to be writing the Jessica Jones. I mean, he almost had to have, right?
There's some other seeds going on with Infamous Iron Man and Guardians where he writes both of those series, and now he's doing all these other fucking awesome things too.
Awesome. So. But this Allison wants to know... She knows that Jessica has secrets because she used to be with Avengers. Jessica's like, what secrets? And then, you know, Allison's naming them off. Mutant, inhuman, technological, genetic... And she's saying, you know more secrets than you even realize. And she's wants to kind of have a quote-unquote maybe partnership, I guess you could say, with her. And Allison is saying that I'm here to rescue you. And you... see that she's trying really... Oh, sorry here. She's trying to have kind of establish some trust with her. And she's pretty... Yeah, she's giving her a spiel. And let's see here. I want to make sure. Oh, she also realizes that she has nothing to threaten Jessica with. Because Jessica, for the most part, is down on the dumps to begin with. But you see that they're trying to... She's trying to say that we can have a very beneficial relationship with the two of us. And just like that, she does something and she, like... She's tied up behind a chair and she... it's like these metal bracelets... And she unsnaps them, and she's like, you're free to go. She's like, well, where am I? And she's just like, she just wants her to, like, kick the door open. So she kicks the door open, and she's in front of her own, like, apartment complex.
Yeah, she's just, like, across the street.
Yeah. And she's like, you gotta be kidding me. And we see Luke Cage and the detective, and you see kind of Jessica kind of jumping... doing her flying slash jumping thing that she does. And then all the detective says is, I have to tell you, that's not good. So shit is going to go down. I don't know what, where the relationship between Allison and Jessica is going in regards to where her daughter, Jessica's daughter is, where Luke Cage fits in, where if she's going to continue with her investigation, what she was originally hired for. I don't know where it's going, but you did just blow my mind with this Allison character.
Yeah.
Looks like you got something to say about that.
Well, I'm glad you brought Allison back, because if I were casting this, and if we have a trend of having artists listen to our podcast.
Yeah.
So, Michael Gatos, if you're listening, Elizabeth Reeser, who I'm a fan of.
I recognize her, but I don't know why.
Yeah, she's got, she basically, when I was reading her in here and seeing her, I just kept picturing Elizabeth
Reeser. Where do I know her from?
Well, her one of the biggest credits is that she's in the Twilight movies. She's the mom. She's the Cullen mom.
Oh, okay.
But she was in Young Adult, The Family Stone. I got all those movies there. And then she was in one of Joss Whedon's things that he had written. Hello, my name is Doris. I liked her in there. She's in a lot of stuff that I like, a lot of things like that. But when I was watching this and looking at Michael Gatto's art, I was kind of crazy because I'm like, oh, it kind of looks like Elizabeth Reeser. So, yeah.
So, for all my years of comic book reading, I've been mostly reading a lot of DC. But when they do this stuff, when they're planting these seeds for future series and issues, that makes me want to jump on a lot more Marvel. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah. How about Marvel Now?
Yeah. Well.
Right now?
Right. Marvel Now. We're in Marvel Now.
Yeah, we are.
Jessica Jones, number 3. I'm loving the series. No idea where it's going, but Brian Michael Bendis is fucking killing it. So, but yeah, Jessica Jones, number 3.
And the last spoiler-filled review is for Hawkeye, issue number 1. This has a very big synopsis intro, so here we go. Remember Hawkeye? No, not that Hawkeye. Our favorite Hawkeye. The chick who puts the hawk in the Hawkeye. The butt-kicking hero who had to save the other Hawkeye's butt all the time. Yup, you know her. It's the dazzling Kate Bishop making her solo comics debut. Kate is heading west and returning to Los Angeles with her bow and arrow and PI badge in tow. There are crimes to solve, and she's the best archer to handle them. The City of Angels has a new guardian angel. The talented duo of Kelly Thompson from A-Force, which I love, and Leonardo Romero, who's from Squadron Supreme and Doctor Strange, bring you a Kate Bishop like you've never seen her before in a brand new ongoing series that really hits the mark. Right at the opening of this, I was getting vibes of the recently canceled Mockingbird series.
Okay.
And I was immediately at home just being like, all right, I think there's like the same, like some of the same people and editors and creative team, and the spirit of that book lives within this Hawkeye book. We see this just fun, this little like application for a private investigator license. And it just kind of gives you the idea, like prime suspects, and then it lists the credits, which is written by Kelly Thompson. Art by Leonardo Romero. Colors by Jordi Belair. She's going to be at C2E2. So I can have her sign
she's
this.
She's doing a lot too, man.
Yeah.
God.
Letters by VC's Joe Sabino and designer Manny Medeiros. Right away at the opening, I'm like, okay, I got a feeling I'm going to love the hell out of this book. Kate Bishop has relocated to Los Angeles to keep working as a private investigator. When she was in the Matt Fraction, David Aja, brilliant series. Towards the end of it, they started switching off where they would do a Kate issue and a Clint issue. And when they did the Kate issues, I was just like, all right, I want like all Kate issues. Like, I was just loving the tone of that. Bought a t-shirt, so pumped up. I have her action figure now downstairs. She's part of a three-pack Marvel Legends exclusive. So I had to buy two other figures in order to get her figure. Well worth it. But anyways, she is now in Los Angeles, and she's on Venice Beach. She's overlooking the waters, and she's investigating some surfers, and she sees that something's a little odd on the beach when she realized three suited men who are very much standing out when everyone's walking around with surfboards and shorts and tank tops and all that kind of stuff. And while she was doing that is when she realizes off in the distance something else is going on, is that she witnesses some people these guys are going into a bank. And so when she was, what's crazy about this issue is that we start off, she's looking at surfers. We never actually get back to who she was actually investigating.
Okay.
So like in the middle of a possible client case that she's working on, she just happened to run into those suit people who then realized that they had guns and went into the bank. So that's when she takes, puts down, and she's wearing like a Spider-Man hoodie, I think. Oh, yeah, she has a I love New York, but the love is a heart of Spider-Man's face.
Cool.
So she takes off her normal civilian clothes, and you could just get this awesome montage of grabbing her bow and arrows and tying up her hair and grabbing her gloves and then putting on her awesome shades and just queuing it up and just turning into Hawkeye for a nice action shot there as she jumps into the scene. Sees them going to the bank, and she easily stops them, and she uses all their arrows to take away their getaway car. She goes in here, and it's crazy, like, I don't know how to explain this, but Mockingbird would do this, where there's so many, like, interesting facts that are, like, in each scene to kind of show, like, what goes through her mind. So what she's going through here, she's kind of, like, she kind of gives everyone,
she's
like...
She's analyzing everything.
Analyze this. She noticed the smoke alarm. She noticed Batty, one of the bad guys, and then the bank teller and a bystander, another bystander, another bystander, security guard, where the fire alarm is. And, so she locates all those, things. And actually when she was, on the beach, when she noticed the suit people, because there was nothing really that funny about this one, but she goes here, she notices a president mask, a gun, and then she noticed, a poorly covered plate, a running car, and then she noticed mini donuts, somebody eating mini donuts, and then she sees more hot abs. And, yeah, so she's, it's funny that, you know, some of them are very technical things that are important to the situation, and not to say abs aren't important, but she, they're very important to her because she pointed them out there. So, yeah, she easily just takes these people out, and by the time the cops and the security guards get there, she just kind of, like, walks out. She's like, all right, your job's done. I got them all taken care of, and, you know, you're welcome. And doesn't want to take any credit for it. She just leaves while everyone's being busted there. So it's pretty funny just how, just nonchalantly, while in the middle of a PI case, she's just like, oh, I'll go stop this bank robbery and get back to what I was doing. She goes back to her office where a lady from the surf shop next door is upset that Kate has parked her car in the customer parking lot. I'm assuming that with this series that we're going to be seeing a lot of, like, her office and just kind of crazy characters around the area. And this is our first character, I assume, that's probably going to be recurring. And she already pissed her off by, you know, parking in her parking space there. So something that very, like, minimal for, like, the story in general. But I think it could be, like, I don't think this is the last we're going to see of this character here. This girl that works next door here. Just one of the little seeds that I think were planted in here. Then we have a montage of possible clients as she hangs up a sign on her door for the Hawkeye. She drew it out herself and it just says Hawk, and then you have a drawing of an eye, investigations. Well, there's a montage of all these possible clients that are coming in. There's a lot of people that are thinking that it's an optometrist.
Okay.
And a lot of people are thinking that it's for Clint Barton Hawkeye.
Yeah. Because
they're like, well, we want the guy. We want the real Hawkeye. And, you know, she said, I think she even says something like, the real Hawkeye? Like, yeah, here we go. She goes, no, sir, I will not, as you say, find the real Hawkeye for you so that you can punch him in the face. So that's why somebody wanted to find Hawkeye, so they could punch him out. But yeah, so she's just kind of going through this funny montage here and just being very frustrated of starting this business and wondering if it was a mistake with the sign and all that kind of stuff. But then this young girl, young college girl, Mika, she comes in to talk about how she's being harassed on her popular blog and by some guy who is actually starting to freak her out. So this Mika character shows up, and we have like a real case here, and just saying how this guy's been kind of following around, and she doesn't feel safe with this guy out and about. And we don't get a lot of details of what's going on, but basically just that, like, maybe like a stalker type of character here. And so she goes to the college, Kenny College in Venice, California. Goes to the college, Kate goes through, she's able to weasel her way into the library because she needed a student ID, which she easily steals, and she runs into this guy, and he just goes, Sunshine? And she was just like, why would you think that's an appropriate thing to say to me? Because he's just like, hey, Sunshine.
Yeah.
And then he just goes, I thought it was your name, because the student ID that she stole was from somebody named Sunshine Johnson. And then she just, real quick, she's like, right you are, young man. So anyways, there's needless to say, there's a lot of comedy in this book. Comedy in this book. Did I say that right?
I think so.
Comedy in this book?
There's a lot of book in that comedy.
There's a lot of book inside this comedy.
Yes.
That's true, too. Because there's a lot to read, a lot of narration going on, a lot of the fun little things that she pinpoints, and all that kind of stuff. Then we get some more good abs here coming up. So anyways, Keiko's undercover. She's at the college. This guy named Quinn that she had run into, apparently he's good at computers. She's not so good at computers. And she enlists him to help along, basically. Kate easily sees some guy who's taking pictures of Mika outside of the school. So as she's kind of like watching Mika in the normal, like being like, all right, who looks suspicious out here? She has a prime suspect, and you just see this guy who's just simply just standing on the side of the building behind a tree, and he's just constantly clicking, and easily he notices her, and that's when she's just like, oh, crap. And he takes off. She runs after her. She, like, jumps off the palm tree and tackles him down real easily and stuff, it's a one-and-done case, basically. It's all right there, and she captures the guy, takes him down, and everything's all fine and dandy. Kate's all happy that she had, you know, helped somebody. She got a case, she took care of it, kind of like after she did the bank robbery thing, where, you know, very nonchalantly, just kind of pushed it aside, being like, all right, mission over, move on to the next thing. But then we cut to Mika, who is saying goodbye to some friends. She's at a hangout. We're now nighttime in, like, some alley. And she gets taken away, pushed out of the alley, and we just see a screeching van, and then we get this mysterious messenger bag, which drops from her, but then, I don't know if this is a comic thing that's, like, fun for the comic, but there's a TBC, and there's, like, maybe, like, a hockey mask-looking thing, but the TBC, I'm assuming, is to be continued. Yeah. So I don't know if this is like a graphic. Watch out,
Jason's coming.
Like, it looks like it could be like a flyer that like came out of her bag or something, or something like. So I don't know if that's a comic book thing that was their fun little like to be continued, and it's over the messenger bag, or if that is something that fell out of her bag. So that was the only thing that was really kind of left questioning, but that'll make me want to pick up the
exactly.
Yeah, so Kate Bishop, like I said, the instant that I was reading her individual series inside the real, quote-unquote, the real Hawkeye series, that's what I was hoping that somewhere down the line, and, you know, that was like 2+ years ago already that happened with those solo issues and of hers, and here she is on the cover. It's kind of designed like Mockingbird. I'll have to look to see who the...
Curious where Clint is, then.
Well, Clint, remember he killed the Bruce Banner in the Hulk?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He had that whole court case in which he was not guilty and everything, when he was let go and everything. And since then, he probably
ran off in the head.
Well, actually, we should know what he's doing, because he has his own book called Occupy Avengers, which is one of the few books I'm not reading, but it's intrigued me. And, you know, everything is 25% off at Crimson Cowl on Wednesday, December 21st. So if you're listening to this right away when we drop this tonight, come hang out on Wednesday for New Book Day from 3 to 8. And then they have a special, like, everything 25% off sale. Mm-hmm. I think that's how they word it. If not, let's blame Barry Allen for messing up the timelines.
Fuck it up again, Barry.
Yep. But anyways, Occupy Avengers... It was one of those I didn't order, but I'd just been, like, looking at that cover every now and then and just being like, just like what you asked. Now, this book makes me wonder, because people want to punch him in the face.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's because of all the shit that happened in Civil War 2. Oh. But, I think I might have to pick up that book to see, to answer that question for you.
There we
go. Because I feel bad that I don't know the answer. Now
you
I have
should
to go,
feel bad.
I have to go to the archives. Normally I'd go to my archives, but now I've got to go to the Crimson Cull archives.
Yeah, that's all right.
To buy things to put into my archives.
There we go.
But needless to say, super, super excited. This is a fun issue. One of my favorite top three favorite books of this past week. That was Hawkeye, issue number one. Okay, a list of other books that I enjoyed this past week, as well as last week, because we took off. We missed an episode, missed an issue, if you will.
Not too often. That doesn't happen.
So here we go. Decent-sized list for me. Amazing Spider-Man, Dead No More, Clone Conspiracy, number 3. Giant Days, number 21. Batman, number 12. All-New Wolverine, snickety-snickety-snoich. Actually, I should just say snickety-snoich, because there's G has got two claws, so maybe it's not three. Number 15. The Walking Dead, number 161. Shade the Changing Girl, number 3. Star Wars Dr. Aphra, number 1. Silk, number 15. Old Man Logan, number 15. Reborn, number 3. Spider-Man, number 10. Star Wars Poe Dameron, number 9. Jessica Jones, number 3. Supergirl, number 4. 20 minutes later, The Flash, number 12. Daredevil, number 14. Namesake, number 2. And lastly, Amazing Spider-Man, Renew Your Vows, number 2.
Woo! All right. And I enjoyed other books as well. Serenity, number 2. Yes. Glitter Bomb, number 4. Ringside, number 8. Batman, number 12. Shade the Changing Girl, number 3. The Walking Dead, 161. Batman Detective Comics, 946. Red Hood and the Outlaws, number 5. Hadrian's Wall, number 4. I finally got The Unworthy Thor, number 2. And this one, I have an asterisk by this one. I read it and enjoyed it. Alpha King, number 3. The reason there's an asterisk between that is because that is a book that Brian Azzarello is doing with a brewery out of Indiana. Right. And that hasn't come out in, like, 5 months. So, like, I actually don't... I'm going to have to reread number 1 and 2. But the only reason I got it, because at the time our company sold the beer. So I'm like... Well, I gotta get a comic book that's based off my job. You know, had to
be the company man.
Yeah, so. But we haven't. Yeah,
like I buy all pig related comic books all the time.
Smart man.
But the last pig related comic book I remember is Cryptozoic Man by Brian Johnson and Walt Flanagan.
Okay,
an evil pig in there.
When there's a Charlotte's Web comic book, I want to make sure you get it. Okay,
will do.
But yeah, Alpha King, really fucked up book, but it's really. Really crazy artwork. Fortunately, I just don't remember what the other two were about. But those are other books I enjoyed.
And I was glad that you mentioned The Unworthy Thor number 2 and Glitter Bomb number 4. Those are two of my top picks from last week. So just because we didn't do one. Glitter Bomb
is hitting on every single mark.
Yeah.
It really is.
And that was the end of the 4-issue arc, and then we're going to get it back in like fall, so we're going to have a long wait. But the issue is so damn good that it's going to be exciting when it does come back.
Oh, yeah. So, and now I believe we have a word from our sponsor.
Come on down to Buffalo Column Thighs. Here at Buffalo Column Thighs, we've got thighs for days and boneless sodas for weeks. Just mention the offer code ASSFACE for 20% off your order today. Buffalo Column Thighs, where the wild wings flew south for the winter. Okay, the spoiler section is over, so fear not. Anything we talk about from this point on is just to help sell you and talk about what other stuff we've been reading and what's been going on in the comics world. A couple things that I read.
Oh, yes.
Yes, this thing.
I was looking forward to this.
I was super excited. So in the standoff event from the beginning of the year, there was a tie-in issue to an issue of Howling Commandos issue number like 7 or 6, I think it was. And, I think it was that. And, since I was reading the standoff event, I'm like, well, I'll pick up this here to check out the tie-in. And I'm like, oh man, I didn't know what was going on. Dum Dum Dugan and like Hit Monkey's in the book. I'm like, holy crap. And then I'm like, oh, there's Man Thing. And I'm like, all these characters. I'm like, what are they doing? And I always meant to go back to it. And then I heard the series got canceled. It was just a short little run. I'm just like, oh, man. And I just kept forgetting about it. Then in Old Man Logan number 14, they appeared as Logan went to go get to find Jubilee, who was at Dracula's place, his castle. And they ran into Stake, the acronym Stake, in which I don't remember. I'm sure it's written in here somewhere. But anyways, they are also called the Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D., emphasis on the Howling because it's the Supernatural division. And the trade paperback is out. It's collecting Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1 through 6. That's all there is for the series. Includes some material from S.H.I.E.L.D. Number 9, which I had owned and because I was following the S.H.I.E.L.D. series too. S.H.I.E.L.D. gets weird as Dum-Dum Dugan takes a new role. Hidden deep beneath Area 13 lies the clandestine headquarters of STAKE, a top-secret division of S.H.I.E.L.D. housing aliens, mythical beasts, and all manner of extra-normals. Now under the command of legendary soldier and newly resurrected life model decoy Dum-Dum Dugan, these monsters step out of the shadows to defend the world against threats too dangerous for normal men. They are the Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D., but as conspiracy grows within the ranks of STAKE, Dum-Dum struggles to hold his team together. This is basically like a Marvel version of like a Suicide Squad.
Okay.
S.H.I.E.L.D. has all of these characters, which I'm going to use the cover so I can name them. You got your Orgo. You got your Hitmonkey. You got yourself Man-Thing. You got Manphibian. You got, which I missaid his name on the AB Conversation podcast, available on iTunes. I said he was like the son of Abomination or something. He is Teen Abomination, which could also be true, but his character's name is Teen Abomination. You got Vampire by Night. You got the LMD, Dum-Dum Dugan. You have the zombie version of Agent Sitwell.
What I was going to compare this to, I was going to compare this to Justice League Dark.
Okay.
Because that's like all of the like the mythical creatures that DC that makes has. Sense. Yeah.
Here's where the Suicide Squad comes in. So S.H.I.E.L.D. has all of these people, all of these creatures I just mentioned, and more, in prison cells. And when they have a mission, they pick up the people they need, they open those gates, and they have them go do these missions. So much like a Suicide Squad is basically what they are. And some of these creatures are like, well, they're trying to, make us be good and stuff like that, and we're helping them out. But when you just take, when you have, like, characters like Hitmonkey and Man-Thing and all
hell yeah.
I'm,
like, looking when this was published. First printing, this was printed in 2016, but I wonder when the actual...
At the beginning of this year is when the last issue came out, I think.
Oh, okay.
Because,
so it's not that old at all.
Because, yeah, it was, well, like I said, with the standoff event, because you get that issue in here. So I own one issue of Howling Commandos, because I bought it because of the standoff tie-in, and that's now collected in here. So that was...
Did you read the whole thing then?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
I devoured the hell out of that, and absolutely loved it. There was a great letter. Let me say the creators here. Written by Frank J. Barbier, art by Bren Schoonover, colors by Nick Filardi, and letters by Joe Caramagna. Then the back of this collection here, you have a nice letter from the creators just thanking everyone. They call it Going Commando. And after reading this, I'm just like, God damn it, I wasn't there at the ground level, and I missed out on it, the series is done, and I wasn't there to help rally it and talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about it now, and trade paperback's out now. That doesn't stop any, nothing ends unless you go out and check this out. And it was fun, a lot of supernatural elements. You take all your crazy characters that don't have their own series, with exception of the upcoming Man-Thing by R.L. Stein that we talked about a while back. But yeah, if you like Suicide Squad, take that, but with some Marvel underused characters. And the fact that they showed up in The Old Man Logan, which was just a two-issue arc, because 15 came out pretty quick too. I hope that's not the last that we see of the Howling Commandos. That, hey, maybe in Man-Thing series, maybe R.L. Stein will tie that in, unless he's going to keep that kind of his own little thing. I'm not sure, but damn, I already miss them, and I love these characters. I want to go through and see if, like, any of these... I doubt any of them have action figures. Dum-Dum Dugan probably does. Man-Thing has one. Hitmonkey probably doesn't. But because I'm like, it'd be so great to buy all their figures and...
put them together have your own little... Yeah?
Maybe I'll just buy Clayface and he can stand in for Orgo.
Yeah, there we go.
But yeah, anyways, I'll use my my Abe Sapien figure from Hellboy in the bottom there. He can be Manphibian. So
there you go. Just gotta paint him green.
Well, I'll have David over at Crimson Cull, because he does customized action figures. So
I was paging through this, you just said that thing. I saw this and I'm like, wow, man, you know who this reminds me of? And I saw that immediately and I was like, holy shit. And then I'm
Cowboy.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Abe Sapien down there and I'm like, that one cover that they have, it must be some kind of a variant cover. It looks like Abe Sapien.
And
it's not, but...
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out because it's from one of my favorite artists, Francesco Francavilla. Oh, and that's definitely some gorgeous stuff there. But I do want to go back and get the individual, even though I own them all right here.
Sure.
I want to, and there are only six of them, but, and I have one of them ready.
Sure, yeah. I think you can track those down.
But, damn, it was a lot of fun. Dum Dum Dugan, he's an LMD, a life model decoy, and he's basically, like, stuck on, like, he just has this, like, he's like a video game, basically, where he can just, like, die and then come back into a different, LMD. So, Damn,
there's some other stuff in a pile that I'm looking at there.
Yes, Buffy the High School Years, Glutton for Punishment. Outside of the normal Buffy series that's taken place to continue on the show in the season format, we're currently at season 11, which I think issue 2 comes out this week, I think, at the time of this recording. They've done these like little graphic novels. This is the second one that they've done. The other one I talked about, I think, during summer... on the AB conversation. When Buffy and Xander sign up for home ec, assuming it'll be an extra credit cakewalk, they aren't aware that the teacher is a ravenous tiger demon in disguise. I'll just leave it at that. So this is just a fun little graphic novel that came out. It's just going back to Buffy's high school years, because, you know, she graduated in season 3 of the show. So that was...
So like 1980?
No, that was 1999 into 2000.
Okay.
So the fact that... Cripes, that was 17 years ago. So it's fun to get this while the show continues on in their current lives, long after like college and stuff. It's fun to get these little graphic novel releases from Dark Horse to get some like lost episodes, if you will. So yeah, we have the script by Cal McDonald, art by Yishan Lee, colors by Rod Espinosa and Tony Galvan. Letters by Richard Starkings and Comic Crafts, Jimmy Betancourt. Scott Fisher does the beautiful cover there. But yeah, everyone, they did a great job of capturing the voices of the Buffy characters that I know and love. I've loved the show since 97. I've met the majority of these actors numerous times. And this is done in kind of like an anime sort of style. So it's still very true to the styles of... you know, looking at, like, Nicholas Brendan and Sarah Michelle Gellar and Allison Hannigan and Anthony Stewart Head and all them, like, you definitely know who's who.
Sure.
But it also has a little bit of an anime type of twist, and that would make sense because the artist's name, Yishan Lee. So you can assume that the art fits the name there. But it really did capture, it wasn't just like... this is their version of Buffy. It really did hone it in with that writing as well. So I adored that little read there.
I'm assuming that Joss is the executive producing it again. His name is right there.
Yep. So I'm assuming it didn't exist without his approval and then I went deep into my stacks for something that isn't as recent as the two I just talked about, and finally got around to Lockjaw and the Pet Avengers Unleashed. This is one of those things I found like a $5 trade.
If it was worth $5.
The Pet Avengers reassembled for an all-new adventure. The disappearance of the Asgardian amphibian, Frog Thor, brings the rest of Pet Avengers together for a rescue mission. But he's not the only mythical creature they'll find, as an entire world filled with creatures of myth collides with ours in the middle of Central Park. New friends and foes jump into the fray, along with familiar roster of everyone's favorite Marvel pets, Lockjaw, which is Kitty Pryde's dragon, so that's why I was super excited, Redwing, who is Sam Wilson's, the Falcon's bird. In the movies, he's a drone, because that makes sense. In the comics, it's an actual bird. Zabu, who I think is this, like a saber-toothed tiger. I have no idea where Zabu is from. Lockjaw. I don't know if I said it right. Lockjaw, and then also Lockheed. Lockheed's the dragon.
Okay.
I was just in
Lockjaw is the dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I was just excited to talk about that. Lockheed, the dragon. Hairball, which is this cat that's hanging on Lockjaw. I don't know where Hairball's from. And Miss Lion, which I'm pretty sure is, if I remember now, is this little like poodle dog, the Shih Tzu.
Looks like
dog
a Shih Tzu, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was Miss Lion. Anyway, there's a lot of comedy in here. 4-issue series here. I got it because I'm like, it was $5. I'm like, it looks fun as hell when you have Frog Thor just in the middle, just with the Mjolnir.
Yeah.
And like I said, Lockheed was one of my biggest draws. But then you had a bunch of other like zoo animals here. And then you have some other mythical creatures that you see, other mythical animals and stuff. And a crazy story where Frog Thor has gone missing and then the Pet Avengers have to assemble. And it wasn't until after reading this that I like looked back at the cover, Lockjaw and the Pet Avengers Unleashed. And then I had to giggle because I realized Unleashed. Like, Unleashed, Pets, Leash.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I didn't get that till after reading it, and I'm just like,
one of those.
Yeah. We can go to Kiss Deck.
Yeah.
That was one of those late reactions to it, but yeah, but it was fun. I mean,
cool.
You don't need any Marvel knowledge to enjoy this, and it's just great, gorgeous art throughout.
I want to see when this was written. This is actually a big book. It's like an oversized
book. Yeah.
First printing 2010. Oh, very cool. So you said you've had this for a while, though, huh?
Yeah, we're not that long, but it was just one of those
since
things where I just bought a bunch of things, and yeah, I haven't had it since 2010.
Wow, we have a this
yeah, a unicorn.
Wow.
Yeah, unicorn.
Shih Tzu is being wow. I'm like just paging through this, and
it's definitely a gorgeous book. But yeah, I enjoyed it. If you like animals. pick this up. There's no pigs in here, though. So, you know how much I like collecting pig comics.
Absolutely.
But I think
when a Babe comic comes out, you're gonna... I don't even know where I'm getting this stuff
Babe
from.
Babe 2, Pig in the City.
you own it, don't you?
I might. I liked it. written by Chris Eliopoulos. Art by Ig Guara. Colors by Soto Color and Jay Roberts. Soto Color sounds like a company. Otherwise, it's a guy or a gal who is just born to color.
Yeah.
If your half of your name is color. Letters by Virtual Calligraphy's Joe Sabino. That's what VC stands for. I never knew what that...
What was it? Yeah, what was it?
It says Virtual Calligraphy.
Oh, wow.
You know, since we've been talking about VC's Joe Sabino, which I think I just said not too long ago, and... it would always say just VC. So I imagine back in 2010, they were like, oh, Virtual Calligraphy.
And now
they're just like 6 years later, you guys know what it means.
Yeah, like, we totally knew. We knew the whole time.
And then there's a short story. Got some credits in here. Anyways, there's a couple short stories. Especially one, there was edited by Nathan Cosby, who was... He did, if I'm not mistaken, I think he did Cowboy, which is a graphic novel. But right when I like saw like the art style and stuff, I just knew this Chris Eliopoulos, who has the same kind of, does this kind of like fun, more like family friendly kid type of work and stuff. But it was fun. And,
yeah,
you know,
cool.
So check that out if you haven't. If you like the pets from the Marvel
Universe. Don't always have to be reading something that's in continuity and, just something fucking fun. And
that's what I was excited, because looking at my stacks, there was be like, well, if I read this, then I have to read this and this and this and this next. I looked at that being like, oh, I can just
have some fun.
Knock that out and
get
it done. So, So that was the comics there.
Speaking of trades,
Baby Got Back
issues.
Yeah.
It's my pick of the month, and we're going to be reading Saga, talking about that and geeking out about that.
Yes, we're going to drop that full episode of spoilers in which we're going to talk about issues 1-6 in that volume 1, Saturday, December 31st. So, New Year's Eve.
Yep.
Instead of counting down to the new year, count down until we drop that podcast.
That's a bigger deal anyway. There's going
to
be...
We should read the issues from 6-1. Issue 6,
yeah, right.
5, 4...
Wait, what? Wait, how did they get to... I don't understand what's going on. Yeah. But yeah, that's... I'm looking forward to talking about that. And that is... I consider that... I want to say Saga was the very first thing I actually subscribed to.
It's huge.
Because that's right basically when I started heavy in the comics. So that's when I was like, you know, wait, you can get these monthly? And I think that was, because I got started with issue number one, and now we're at, like, what, damn near 40 issues almost. So it's been good going stuff. Strong.
Yeah, so I'm excited to dip into that as well. So yeah, Baby Got Back issues, check that out. And that's we use it as a book club, so whether you've read it, then you can reread it, check it out, send us comments and questions and just your impressions and all that kind of stuff that we can read along when we record that episode, which we'll be doing very shortly here as the year is winding down. But when the year is winding down, that means that we read a lot of comics that year.
We did.
And we're excited about another year of comics.
It is. It's. I like thinking of where comics are going to be in 2017.
They're going to be on the shelves at Crimson Cowl if you're local in West Bend, Wisconsin.
Yes.
Or Washington County area, or just Wisconsin. Go everywhere to get to Crimson Cowl.
If you're in a different country, fly to West Bend, Wisconsin to Crimson Cowl Comics.
Yes. So that's where comics are going to be in 2017.
Yeah. But for real, I wonder where the big events are going to take us with DC and Marvel. There's a lot of breakout artists that are working for Marvel and DC that are they going to be coming out with creator-owned work like Marguerite Bennett did. It's exciting.
So many comics.
And
we love talking about them.
We fucking love talking about them because we do it for comic's sake.
For Comic's Sake on iTunes.
At For Comic's Sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/For Comic's Sake.
For Comic's Sake on Instagram.
Or email us forcomicsake@yahoo.com.
Music by Bicycle vs. Motor Vehicle. Please visit them online, soundcloud.com/BVSMV, as well as BVSMV.bandcamp.com. Dramatic sound effect by Digifish Music from freesound.org. And special thank you to our key grip, Brian Kraft. Where the wild wings flew south for the wind. Fuck.